Hey, Prime members, you can listen to That Scene with Dan Patrick ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
Is this what you do when I'm gone?
Mitch, wait.
No, I mean, I do it myself every once in a while, like, but to magazines.
Okay, Mitch, we need to talk.
Hello?
How fun is being the straight man?
I always really enjoy it. Being in a scene with Will, I would have to do things where I would like look up at his hairline because I couldn't even look into his eyes because they were twinkling like so hard that he would make me laugh.
Welcome to That Scene with me, Dan Patrick, an Amazon original podcast where I get to talk to Hollywood's top actors and directors about some of the most iconic scenes that have defined their careers, helped shape the cinematic landscape, and even become fixtures in pop culture. On today's show, we're joined by the actor Luke Wilson. Luke began his career in the Wes Anderson film Bottle Rocket, which was written by and co-starred his older brother Owen. The indie film was a critical hit and brought him to Hollywood, where he starred in a slew of romantic comedies throughout the late 90s. He also went on to star in two more of Wes Anderson's films, Rushmore and The Royal Tenenbaums. In 2003, Luke starred in the comedy Old School alongside Will Ferrell and Vince Vaughn. Old School was written and directed by Todd Phillips and was a smash hit at the box office, earning over $86 million worldwide. The scene in question today is when Luke's character Mitch, coming back from a business trip, walks in on his girlfriend Heidi, who's played by Juliette Lewis, and she's having an orgy. When you come back from the business trip and then you catch your girlfriend, she's got an orgy going on and you walk up. So when you see that on the script, what do you imagine it's going to be and what did it turn out to be?
It seemed like a funny scene, but yeah, even like the location that they'd chosen, it was a condo out in like Pasadena. So even that was kind of funny, like, why are we all the way over in Pasadena?
You have to admit it, Mitch. We haven't exactly been living the most exciting lives in the world.
Hello.
Yeah?
I'm here for the gangbang.
And Juliette Lewis.
She's such an incredible actor. Yeah, such a good sense of kind of timing and rhythm to where it all kind of worked perfectly. And to me, it was almost kind of more of a dramatic scene. It wasn't even comedic because Julia's such a good actor.
When did she get attached to the role? Like, was she originally cast?
Yeah, I think she was from the inception of the movie. She was attached to the role, but we all just felt really lucky to have such a good actor playing like a smaller part. You know, it really does kind of make a difference. And when I've like seen the movie on TV, like I've noticed her do the thing where she like takes a drag off a cigarette and then blows it out like before like saying a line, like really like small, funny things.
What do people say to you on the street? What scene in that movie comes up in Old School?
There's so many funny scenes in it. You know, I was just kind of playing more of the straight man in it.
At this point, you may be asking yourself, why am I holding this 30-pound cinder block in my hands? You might also ask yourself, why does this cinder block have a long piece of string tied to it? And finally, why is the other end of this string tied securely to your penis?
How fun is being the straight man?
I always really enjoy it. I've been lucky enough to get to work with all these really, really funny people. They're so sharp, you know, Will and Vince and Tracy Morgan and Bill Hader, like they're all so fun to work with and so interesting that, I just always enjoy getting to be in a scene with them.
Do you have to audition for that role?
I didn't have to audition for that, and it was pretty early on, but yeah, somehow I was just lucky enough to get hired onto that. And Todd, obviously, is an unbelievably talented guy, like went on to do other great movies. Like, I think his last thing was The Joker, where he's a really talented guy.
Will Ferrell said that he had a, I guess it's called a marble pouch when he was doing the streaking scene. Were you there to witness the streaking scene?
Yeah, I was. And again, we were out in Pasadena for some reason. And I just remember neighborhood people being out, including like real kind of nice little old couples. We're just out there kind of working, and there's a guy jogging down the street with no clothes on, which, you know, we find it funny. But at the time, I think, you know, people might have perhaps found it offensive. Well, that's one of those things where you can't believe that he actually did it. But he did.
The party scene. How long did it take to shoot that party scene with Snoop?
I think it was just one night, but it was really funny because that night, like, I'd just kind of been hanging around in my little trailer, just kind of reading, waiting to go to work. And like when I showed up on set, when they came and got me, Will and Vince had been hanging out with Snoop. And I was like, are you guys kidding? They were like, yeah, we've been having an unbelievable time. We're in Snoop's bus.
It's incredible. How did you do this with all the people here and the speakers? I thought we were just having a small get-together.
This is a small get-together. It's one of many small get-togethers. That's why you got the house, brother. You're having fun, right?
I'm having honestly a great time. A great time.
Good.
So what else have you got planned? Like a student band or something?
Just make sure you can see the stage. Now, courtesy of Speaker City, which is slashing prices on everything from beepers to DVD players, give a warm Harrison University welcome to my pal and your favorite, Mr. Snoop Dogg.
Yeah. You know what? I'm thinking up a master plan. Cause ain't nothing but sweat inside my...
I'm over there reading a book about like William de Kooning, and you guys are like partying with Snoop?
Do you get called the Godfather at all on the street?
Yeah, I do. I can still remember like being with my dad in New York and walking down the street, and like a couple times people would be like, hey, Godfather. And my dad was like, people are calling you the Godfather. And I was like, yeah, no, I did this movie that, and because my dad was thinking it was like, you know, somehow tied into Brando and The Godfather. I was like, well, I did this movie, Dad, a comedy where my nickname's The Godfather.
Beanie, what the hell is going on here?
Guys, this is a very special occasion. The Godfather himself has been kind enough to grace us with his presence. The Godfather. This is his damn house. He lives there. He sleeps 20 feet away.
When you read the scene that you sleep with your boss's daughter, Alicia Cuthbert, mm-hmm. I'm always curious how you put yourself in that situation of what does he know? What does he not know? When all of a sudden she comes in and daddy, and then you're like, oh shit.
It's funny because I've watched that scene a few times over the years and I did not have a plan. And that's kind of how we did it with Will and Vince and Todd, is I think we just kind of took each scene as they came along, but I didn't really have a plan on like how to do it, even like coughing up the coffee and like doing like the spit take. There are times I'm like, gosh, I wish I kind of tried something different there. But yeah, I didn't have a plan going into that.
But is that normal though?
I think it is kind of normal. Like you're so caught up in just kind of trying to get through the day and like do this scene, then do that scene. And you're just trying to like knock everything out and like stay on schedule that you don't know something's going to be, not that that's an iconic scene, but you don't know that that's going to be a scene that people really kind of latch on to. Animal House was on the other week. And, you know, it's one of those things where I clicked on it for a second just because John Belushi's so funny, but it was that scene where he's on the ladder. And I'm sure it's the same kind of thing where I was like thinking like, gosh, he's so funny. And then like when he turns back and he looks into the camera, I was thinking like, okay, did he just do that? Or was it in the script? So it's incredible.
But do you sometimes like wait to see how others act in a scene to then kind of form how you act in a scene?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, like we were saying earlier, I have been the straight man a lot of times. So I just kind of am reacting off people. And yeah, that's why it's so, you know, I never want to ruin a scene by starting to laugh.
When you work on a movie set, like old school, how well do you know Vince Vaughn and how well do you know Will Ferrell going in?
Just kind of knew each other in passing. Like, Will and I had gotten together and, like, had dinner before we'd worked together. I didn't know Vince that well. That's always been one of my favorite things is I've gotten to be around a lot of those Saturday Night Live people like Kristen Wiig and Bill Hader and Tracy Morgan, and they really are unbelievable people, just kind of how sharp they are.
Out of that group, funniest guy off camera is who?
I mean, those guys are so sharp. Like, they're all pretty unbelievable. I don't know that you can pick one. Like, being in a scene with Will, I would have to do things where I would, like, look up at his hairline because I couldn't even look into his eyes because they were twinkling, like, so hard that he would make me laugh. And, like, they also, if they feel that you're on the edge of laughing, they then put the pedal down. The same with Tracy Morgan and, like, Kristen Wiig. You know, when someone says, like, that they have a friend who's funny, and it's like, we've all got a friend who's funny, but then these guys, it's like Michael Jordan, where it's just in a whole nother level.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like, every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
When did you know Old School was a hit?
I was working on another movie. I was doing this movie with Kate Hudson and Rob Reiner called Alex and Emma. And we were working at a soundstage kind of way out in the valley. And they were going to have a screening of Old School, like at a AMC theater. So I went after work and I like hustled over there to get there for like a 7 o'clock screening and watch the movie and like remembered thinking like, wow, these people, they're really into it. And then I was out in the parking lot after kids were like high-fiving in the parking lot and imitating like Will and like doing lines from the movie. You know, it reminded me of like being a kid growing up, like after seeing like Ghostbusters in Dallas. That was the first time that had ever happened where I was like, wow, this movie, these people really seem to love it.
What role changed your life?
I mean, I guess Bottle Rocket, just because that was our first movie. And I mean, we'd always kid around because when we first got to Los Angeles and first kind of got the green light to do Bottle Rocket, like different people would be like, so are you guys ready for your life to change? And we'd be like, oh yeah, we're ready. We are ready. And Owen and I always say like 25 years later, nothing's changed. It's all the same.
You don't give a $500 tip to the housekeeper. That's inappropriate. That's inexcusable. That I don't forgive. What were you thinking? What were you thinking? That's what she is.
Don't call her the housekeeper.
Don't threaten me.
That's what she is. She is a housekeeper, right? People are housekeepers.
You better watch it, Dignan. You don't know what you're talking about right now. Her name's Inez.
And my name's Dignan, man. So what?
Bottle Rocket came out of nowhere. You know, I don't know if you knew how talented you were or your brother or Wes Anderson. Like, why do you think that worked?
I don't know. I think Wes wanted to be a director. Owen was a really good writer. Wes was also a good writer. And They were also pretty driven guys, had kind of out of left field type of sense of humor. It still surprises me when people say that they like Bottle Rocket because it kind of came out and, you know, was gone. It was in the theater for 2 weeks and then kind of disappeared. And then Kenneth Turan, the guy that was the writer for the LA Times, gave it a really good review. I think the headline said "The Gang That Couldn't Shoot or Think Straight." Having him give it a good review, and then people like Billy Bob Thornton likes the movie, and he got in touch with Owen West and Sean Penn, like he really liked the movie. And then kind of these people that we really looked up to and admired, like liked the movie, and like that kind of meant a lot to us.
When you get the script for Royal Tenenbaums and you look at everything that's going on with your character, you have a pet hawk, you're in love with your adopted sister. There's a lot of things to kind of process here. What are you thinking when you're reading it?
Reading the script, it was like reading a novel. It was just great writing.
I'm worried about you, Richie.
Why?
Well, actually, Margot is for some reason. But I did find it odd when you said you were in love with her. She's married, you know.
Yeah.
And she's your sister.
Adopted.
Everything seemed to kind of get a little more heightened where Bottle Rocket, we had James Caan, and that was pretty incredible. And then we all were, you know, of course, huge Bill Murray fans and grew up loving Stripes and him on SNL. And but then to get to the chance to do the Tenenbaums, where it was Angelica Houston and Danny Glover and Gwyneth Paltrow and then Gene Hackman. And then everything changed, like the wardrobe, you know, in the production design, everything was kind of heightened.
How would you describe your style? Because it feels like you can morph into a lot of different things here, which is, you know, the testament of a very good actor. But do you get those roles where you go, I don't want to play those roles anymore? Like I, you know, in, you know, what, Legally Blonde. Oh, I got to play this role. I'm that guy again. Like you sort of say, can I be something crazy, different, goofy, wacky?
It might be something that kind of hits me more as getting older and like having been doing it for 25 years. I try to not think about it, but, you know, I do like to read about other actors and I do like to read about guys that like studied, you know, Stanislavski and those kind of people. Like I like to read about like sense memory, but then I also think about like Harry Dean Stanton, where if a great character actor, where he'd be like, none of it matters. It's nothing. Be like, oh, okay, Harry Dean, I got it. I know none of it matters, but he'd be like, you don't get it. It's nothing. So, I mean, I think it's somewhere in between all those kind of different styles.
We were both in a scene in a Sandler movie. You were supposed to protect me. You were my bodyguard. I was Abe Lincoln, and it didn't go well for me. How did I fare as Lincoln?
Two names come to mind, which is Daniel Day-Lewis and Brando. And then I think there's you in terms of really inhabiting a role.
I used to work for the President of the United States. How's his personal bodyguard? One of the best. Till one night.
Mr. President, say I'm gonna go hit the little boy's room.
Are you shitting me?
Come on, you'll be fine, superstar. Can I get you something on the way back? Agua? Brewski?
Oh.
Miss Lincoln, how about one of them big pretzels or a little pillow? I hear this place kind of a long one. All right, fair enough. I'll be back in two.
No, I think you did an unbelievable role. And you've been lucky enough to work with Adam a bunch of times. And when I got to do Ridiculous Six, that's the most fun I've ever had. And yeah, Adam's an unbelievable guy.
Do you keep stuff from the set?
You know, there are those things they call the chair backs where you have a chair on set. So always kind of keep those. And Wes was nice enough to give me on the Tenenbaums. He gave me the Javelina head, and I have that in my living room.
You have it in your living room?
Yeah. Yeah, and I can't believe Wes gave it to me because it's like kind of a pivotal point in the movie. Like, it's one of those things where I'm really happy to have it.
Do you have the painting of you from old school?
No, I don't. And I always wonder about that because it's a great painting. I remember at the time I was like, wow, it kind of looks like JFK.
Like, if I must say so myself.
No, I know. I think that's what kind of kept me from keeping it. I was so enamored with it.
Were you a Cowboys fan growing up?
Yeah. I mean, I had friends and family members that were rabid Cowboys fans, but in Dallas in the 70s, it was like Roger Staubach and Tony Dorsett and Tom Landry. It was like, it was really a big part of growing up in Dallas in the 70s was being a Cowboys fan.
Were you an athlete?
Yeah, I played football and I ran track. I love playing sports. And I feel like playing sports really helped me out here being in this business, like just knowing how to operate on a team.
Well, also the competitive part of it too. I mean, how competitive is Hollywood even now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it really is competitive, but I feel like I'm not that dialed into Hollywood, like just kind of hang around with my brothers and the same few guys that I grew up with. So don't really get into the competitive aspect of it that much. And definitely have people that'll ask me, like, are Owen and I competitive? And the truth of it is not at all. Like, we just want each other to be doing well and to be getting jobs and stuff like that.
When's the last time you and Owen had a true fight?
I don't know if it was a year ago or 2 years ago, but we got into a really bad argument a couple of years ago over a rules violation. Greg Kinnear was over at the house that day, and so was our friend Bradley Thomas, but we had a real meltdown together.
But who's the stickler for the rule? Was it you or was it Owen?
I'm not sure. I think it might have been me. We play this game we call Little Sticky, where we play with a short club, like a kid's club, but we stand up on the grass and knock it down to this putting green that's down by the road. And Owen had knocked one into what I thought was to be OB. And he was saying that he got a free drop. And then we just had this unbelievable argument. And yeah, but that was the last time, but we got through it.
Were you both superheroes at the same time or in a superhero show when you guys were living in Atlanta?
Owen had started Loki, and then they got shut down by the pandemic for a long time. So then when I went back to do season two of Stargirl, we were both in town at the same time. And our friend Woody Harrelson, he'd worked in Atlanta so much that he bought this great house in this real nice neighborhood, and Owen was renting that at the time. So when I went back to do season two, I lived with Owen, and yeah, it was pretty funny. Like, I thought at a certain point, like, I thought Owen had like a fork attached to his hand, because every time I'd be eating, he'd like appear over my shoulder and be like, hey, what is that? And I'd be like, it's some scrambled eggs I made. And he was like, oh, what is that? Is that you got cheese in there? I'd be like, yeah, I got a little chunks of cheese. I'd be like, may I? I mean, like, what do you mean? He'd be like, can I? And he'd have like a fork and he'd just kind of scoop it out.
And you guys got along as roommates?
Yeah, we didn't have a fight there. We got along great.
What did you think when you first got the script for Stargirl?
For me, the main thing was I met Jeff Johns, who's the creator of the show. I'll never forget, because it was a few years ago when I was trying to figure out like what to do. And I'd met with some people about doing another project. We got along great. And he was just such a good guy and like so funny and like real salt of the earth. Stargirl was kind of based on his sister who had passed away. And sure enough, you know, besides working with Owen and Andrew and Wes, like working with Jeff's been the best thing that's ever happened to me.
Because I was hoping we'd start off the summer maybe you showing me the ropes.
Ropes to what?
The family business. I figured maybe I could go down to the garage and learn how to fly the robot, fire the giant fist, JSA stuff, you know? I got a future to think about. And this paper route thing, it ain't it.
Responsibility, commitment. That's what's important, okay? And you're not going to quit your job.
But going from movie roles to this, what's the biggest difference for you?
I mean, when you're doing a scene, it's like you don't really think about like a movie as opposed to a TV show. It's really cool to come back and work with like the same crew people and the same cast, and like Breck, who plays my daughter, and Trey Romano, who plays my son. Like, really just love working with those people. So yeah, it's a good feeling.
You've embraced the superhero TV shows.
I've kind of had to learn about it, but you know, it's like people that are into like a sports team or something like that. You know, it's like, I feel like I know everything about like Bob Dylan or like Neil Young and things like that. But they're those people that know everything about like the DC universe. So I always appreciate that.
Have you gotten to meet Bob Dylan?
Yeah. Yeah. I've been lucky enough to be around Bob Dylan a few times. Pretty unbelievable.
Just hanging or just going to the concert?
Going to concerts. I've gotten to be around him. And then I did this movie with him called Masked and Anonymous that Larry Charles wrote and directed with Bob. But yeah, I've gotten to be around Dylan a few times. And this friend of mine, he just did a few videos with Bob Dylan for Bob's new album. We live next door to each other. So he'd come back at the end of the day and be like, okay, what happened? How is Bob today? Like, I said, don't even tell me where the set is, because I'll go. Bob was watching playback one day, and the director was like, yeah, I'd like to just do one more take because it wasn't quite perfect. And Dylan was watching the monitor, and he was like, perfect? I mean, what's perfect? And I was like, how am I missing this, man? I should be there. He's unbelievable. And I got to work with Levi Dylan, Bob's grandson, on this football movie, 12 Mighty Orphans. And Levi's a great actor and a really, really nice kid. And he's Jacob's son. But yeah, pretty incredible guy.
I saw Dylan. He had just put out Slow Train.
Uh-huh.
He didn't play any hits. And people are yelling out, like a Rolling Stone, you know, Blonde on Blonde, you know, whatever, Tangled Up. And he just played the album.
There's great audio of him during that Born Again era where he's like, Jackson Brown, he's running on empty. Bruce Springsteen, he's born to run. Bob Seger, he's running against the wind. Everybody's running.
But did he know who you were when you first met him?
I don't think so. Like, people would come up to him and like say, like, do you remember this song, or do you remember this person or this concert? And Bob would always be like, oh, I don't remember. And I was like, okay, Luke, just don't ask him anything. Don't say anything to him, which I didn't. I stuck to my guns and I didn't say anything to him. So when we were on set, like, I'd just kind of stand there. And then one day he came up to me and he was like, you're from Texas, aren't you? And I was like, yeah, I'm from Texas. And he was like, you know Towns Van Zandt? And I was like, I know who Towns Van Zandt is. He's a great songwriter, yeah, from Fort Worth. I was like, you sang Poncho and Lefty at Willie Nelson's 60th birthday party. And he was like, I don't remember. And I was like, well, no, you did. I mean, I've seen it. I saw it on PBS. You and Willie sang Poncho and Lefty. You did an incredible version. He was like, I don't remember. And I was like, no, like, you sang Poncho, Willie sang Lefty. And he was like, I must have been drinking. And then he walked off, and I was like, he got me.
You fanboyed him.
I did, but like, he came up to me. Damn it.
You know, I felt bad when I listened to him because of what he once sounded like. When him and Willie were doing their farm, like, they were doing a minor league baseball tour.
Me and my brother Andrew went to those shows, like the AAA ballparks.
You know what? He's such a wordsmith, and it was hard to understand all of those great, you know, lyrics that he's written. I don't want to see the Stones now, having seen them in the 70s, or the Who, or, you know, those kind of things. It's weird.
Yeah, their voices change, and like, I've always really respected Robert Plant for not putting Led Zeppelin back together, because he says he just can't sing those songs the way he used to, but gotta stay in the game.
Yeah, and I know Robert says he doesn't want to be a jukebox. He doesn't want to get up there and play all of those hits. And I understand it, because if you listen to early Zeppelin, you know, it'd be hard for Bob to get up there at that level there. You know, I was lucky because I'm a little older, so I got to see Zeppelin, Who, Stones, Bowie. My first concert was Aerosmith. And, you know, and to see Dylan in a small venue, Elvis Costello, when he was with the Attractions.
That's unbelievable. I will say that, like, I saw Dylan, like, maybe 20 years ago, like, in a casino. And it was one of the best shows I've ever seen. And he was just kind of singing, like, they almost seemed like kind of lullabies, where he was singing, like, really slow, like, you know, within his range. And you mentioned Elvis Costello. When I was just in New York, and I picked up this book by Nick Lowe, and, like, how incredible he was. But I'm just glad those guys are still playing.
But have you ever thought of doing anything musically, whether it's, you know, being somebody in a role or documentary, or as much as you love music?
Yeah. When I did this show with Cameron Crowe called Roadies, it's in the show where I'm supposed to sing a Warren Zevon song with Jackson Browne. And Jackson Browne was trying to teach me to sing harmony. I didn't understand what harmony was. And I said this to Jackson. I was like, so harmony is when you sing just exactly like the other guy, right? And he was like, no, it's like one guy sings high, one guy sings low. And I was like, okay, but like the band, they weren't all singing the exact same together. He was like, no, they were unbelievable harmony singers. I was like, okay. So the Everly Brothers, they weren't singing the exact same together. And and I'll never forget, he was real frustrated with me. He was like, no, the Everly Brothers, they were like the gold standard of harmony singers. And I never did get it. I can't do it. Like, I was never able to, like, play guitar, never able to do it.
But I'm such an audiophile. Like, I love wearing headphones. I love listening to the music.
Yeah, me too. Like, I actually got these headphones because the gym I use, like, they play such horrible music. And I would always be saying, like, hey, do you mind turning it down? And then finally, this girl that worked there was like, you know, you should get some headphones.
Great to talk to you again. And good luck with Stargirl. And thank you again.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
New episodes of That Scene are available exclusively on Amazon Music, and all of Season 1 is available wherever you get your podcasts, so make sure you follow us in the Amazon Music app. That Scene with Dan Patrick, created, hosted, produced by me. Our showrunner and producer is Brendan Pike, edited by Nathan Moody. The show is executive produced by Paul Anderson, Nick Pinella, and Andrew Greenwood. Our associate producers, Bill Ryan and Marvin Prince. That Scene is an Amazon original and a production of Dan Patrick Productions.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to That Scene with Dan Patrick ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.